Ja, we zijn straks pas aan de beurt hoor, dus... We hebben de Hacker Public Radio nodig voor de intro en voor de outro en voor de rest niks, dus...
Dus dit wordt echt serieus in de klas.
Dit wordt heel serieus.
Krijg je ook serieus in de luisteraar?
Ja. Een stuk of 5000. Daar wordt hij stil van. Flesje water is voor jou. Ik dacht, ik ga hier zitten, dan kunnen we elkaar mooi aankijken en alsnog in die dingen praten.
Ja.
Ja. Hij doet de jingles. Ja, twee keer, hè? Intro en outro. Maar we doen wel gewoon zeg maar de intro jingle. Niet degene met Hacker Public Radio is gesponsord door bla bla bla. Die zet ik er wel zelf achter. We hebben toch alleen de microfoons, dus alles wat we nodig hebben.
Is het gesponsord?
Hacker Public Radio heeft gesponsorde onderdelen. Het wordt gesponsord door Skank Dog.
Wat is het adres van de stream? Weet iemand dat?
Hoeveel we hebben gebruikt.
Bits per seconde. Oh, dat nu kan het nog even
Even een tweetje of zo dat.
Volgens mij wel, zoek anders even een sidekick om het zeker te weten.
Wat is Hacker Public Radio precies eigenlijk?
Hackerpublicradio.org.
Het is jouw programma, de shoot.
Ja, ik ga even kijken of bij sidekick of het inderdaad afgelopen is.
Ja, maar het wordt toch wel gestreamd?
Ja, wel gestreamd inderdaad. Ja, maar waarom
is het stil?
Het is stil.
Paniek in het. Ja. Ja, nu is er weer lawaai.
En dan doe je ook twee, dus ook niet dat iemand aan het kijken is, maar...
Dankjewel. De jingle is voor de ene luisteraar. En dat wij weten van wanneer het begint.
Nou, sorry, ik heb net naar 9.500 Twitter-volgers wat gestuurd. Dus de kans dat we een paar meer luisteraars hebben, die is groot.
Ja. Je hebt sowieso 40...
Ja, ik kan anders even die... je hebt toch het deuntje van C3, dat form.org. Die kan je gratis vooruit. Dat kan je...
Kun je hem even killen? Hallo, test 1, 2, 3, are we here? Ja, 1, 2, 3, ik ga nog verder praten, want volgens mij ben ik nog niet helemaal klaar met controleren, dus ik zit maar wat te zeggen, want ja, er moet toch geluid in om te zien of er daadwerkelijk wat opgenomen wordt. Oké, dan ga ik nu weer verder stomlullen. Ik weet niet wat ik moet zeggen, maar het moet in ieder geval wat uitslaan. Ik zie dat er een hoop knoppen ingedrukt worden, dus dat zal allemaal goed gaan. Bla, bla, bla. Ik weet niet precies meer waar het verder over gaat. Goedemiddag, welkom bij Hacker Public Radio. Ik weet namelijk toch niks beters te zeggen. Win nu Sint Vincent. Wat heeft Windows met... Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Hacker Public Radio. We are here in the studio on ETH0, and I have with me a guest you may remember from a previous time, Mr. Brenno de Winter.
Good afternoon or good morning.
Welcome. The previous time we were at Ohm, and we talked a bit about the subject of censorship in the Netherlands. I was hoping we could have a talk now where we could say how everything gotten a lot better, but I'm afraid you don't have such good news for us.
Well, some things did change. Last time I was explaining that the police was just a bit hindering me. Now I can inform you that it's not only the police hindering me, but the Dutch government decided to put the army, the national coordinator for terrorism, and basically the Ministry of Foreign Affairs on my case. And they started following me, signaling me in order, as they write it, to prevent me from executing my job as a journalist.
Okay. So that sounds a bit as if you've got a label from a terrorist or something.
Well, they claim I don't, because of course I started to sue to stop this. But what happened was that all of a sudden I got indications that a lot of government bodies had a picture of me, warning for me and making sure that I didn't enter their buildings, Among the government building were all the police station but one in the Netherlands, and all departments, and a whole bunch of other organizations. So I started investigating where did this come from, and apparently the Dutch police was afraid that I would either hand out USB sticks with malware, I would send a spam email, I would break into police stations, or I would do some other harm. So the advice was not to use USB sticks, to close all the shades near the windows, and inform people if I was discovered somewhere. And that's the last part is very dangerous for journalists, because if you try to meet with sources and people are actively looking for you, that's hindering you in doing your job.
I would believe that. May I ask, what was the first thing that you noticed that this was going on?
Well, a lot of people said, like, I don't know what you're up to. So I went, like, well, I'm up to nothing really. Why? Well, you're trying to break into buildings. So I went, like, no, I don't. Well, that's the information we get. So I went, like, well, then the information is wrong. And then after a while, somebody handed me a flyer with my photo on it and a warning there. And all of a sudden, I knew it was for real. So I contacted the relevant authorities, like, what on earth is going on? And they basically responded first in denial, and then when I could read the text they had written about me, they said, like, yeah, but it's not that much of a big deal. Then I was entering the finance department, and you have to show your ID if you want to go to your meeting. So I did, and then all of a sudden somebody informed me that there was a Brenno protocol that they were working on, so that I had to stand and wait for security, and security started to intimidate me, shout at me, touch me, basically anything that is related to intimidation.
That's okay.
And then I went public with the story, which ended up in parliament, that started to raise a bunch of questions. Dutch police promised to work to make sure that this wouldn't happen again. And then 1 week later, I had hard proof that they still had the flyers hanging in Utrecht. So then I went public again. There was a new set of questions raised in parliament. And now they promised to really, really stop doing what they were doing. And I started to ask for my police file. And in the police file, it said that it had to do with the National Security Summit, the NSS summit that was held in March in the Netherlands, and they were afraid that I might show up there. And then I remembered that somebody was talking to me at a certain time, basically intimidating me not to register as a journalist for the NSS summit.
Okay. You said that was known at all police stations but one. Is there something about that one certain police station?
Well, that was the police station at the time I was living next to, because they said, like, well, we smoke with him, we go to the pub with him. If he would have wanted to do something, he would have done that over the last 3 years. And nothing happened, of course not. I wouldn't even, you know, think about doing such a thing. But there we were. The rest of society believed so. And in response, ultimately, the responsible minister apologized for doing this and came to the conclusion that they were absolutely wrong. But the damage then still was already done. So with the file in hand, I went to court and asked that, obviously, I haven't seen all documents, even though it was very clear that they wrote that I was typing on a laptop sitting in The Hague on the street. So I was just working on the column, had to finish it, so I was sitting on the couch, on a bench, just typing like an idiot, and sending off the document. And that's basically what he described was a journalist doing his job. So that I found that to be very sad, that they even considered doing this. So I started suing, and then I discovered that there was one document where they didn't write about me alone, but also registered the cars that my sister owns, and also documented the life of my mother. She's 82 years old, bound to a wheelchair, and they did a full profile on her as well. So not only are they going after me, they are also going after my family. And that makes it very personal. That's really scary.
That's really scary, because this is not sounding at all like tactics you would expect from a police station. This is our tactics I am expecting from a completely different kind of organization.
No, I would expect this from a police state. This is typically what the police state does. This is typically if you want to hurt someone's feelings, it's typically what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is apparently what happened. So it hurts. We're still in the process of working through the documents, trying to find out. Police now starts to understand that what they did is totally not acceptable. So we might end up with a deal without going to court. And ultimately, I hope it doesn't come to a verdict, because we're helping nobody. And I'm not after money. That's definitely what it's not about. It's really about the police stopping this type of activity. It's okay for journalists to criticize the public policy of the Netherlands in order to make it better. And over the last couple of days, when we record this at ETH Zero, we've seen that most articles I've written that are very critical about policy do actually... It brings something. I proved in 2011 that SQL injection is one of the biggest problems we have, and on a structural basis, people are not doing anything against it. Now we know that uniquely 1.2 billion credentials have been stolen, and they've been harvested by making scripts that hack 420,000 websites. 420,000 websites. That's such a tremendous number that it shows the sheer structure. And the Netherlands hasn't changed their whole policy yet.
Yes, but let's go into this particular hack for a bit. I mean, we're not talking about one guy who's really good, who goes to 420 different servers and tries all their attacks on them in order to find it. This is basically the beginning. The MySQL exploit 101, this is how it works, fired off against a whole bunch of servers, and these are the ones that replied.
Yes. Of course, it's that simple, but it's policy that that makes it possible. The Dutch law says that if you decide to process privacy-sensitive information, that you have to deliver adequate protection. A lot of websites don't. So they're violating the law. That's the point of criticism I have. Politicians start to do something about it. We have a public watchdog. And what have we seen happening over the last couple of years? The number of employees have gone down. Their task set has more than doubled. So the chance of this watchdog going after these type of organizations is practically nil. When Parliament is talking about this public watchdog, what they typically say is, you know, we know these stories about privacy now all too long. We've heard it, and we're kind of more or less are done with it. Well, if you're done with it, you have to accept the fact that 1.2 billion people ultimately will see their credentials stolen, including a lot of Dutchmen. And where it's definitely not needed. This is something that didn't have to happen.
No, indeed. But this watchdog organization, you've talked to me about it before offline from the radio. But, for example, they had some dealings with the NS regarding the OV chip card as well.
Yes, they've been the Dutch public transportation card, we call it OV chip card, was violating privacy law. It has been violating since 2000. And because of the way the Dutch system works, only last year there was a real threat of a real fine. Up to that moment, the Dutch government didn't have the weapons to hand out a fine. This is something politicians can change. You know, if you do not stick to the law, there is a punishment. if I break the law, there's a punishment. So why shouldn't there be a punishment for companies that do not deliver adequate protection? In the United States, you have got a Federal Trade Commission, and they call this type of behavior an unfair business practice, as they know that from Article 5 of their law. And they can do all sorts of things. In the Netherlands, we can't, because we elected not to. That's the type of criticism I have. And the second point, what is really worrisome, in my opinion, is that we see Dutch police that is very well equipped, but is spending its time on small hackers that do a DDoS against the website of their school. And then we start to arrest them, do a full sweep of their house with 8 people. It's a waste of time. We've got these gangs all over the world, especially in the former Russian states. We've got a lot of crime there, and nobody's thinking about how to stop this crime. And this is something that will cost us billions, but also, you know, stop going after the little fishes that are basically, yes, they are breaking the law. And that's the type of discussion I'm trying to make in society, to at least, you know, we should start to think about it. If I lose the discussion, you know, that's okay, but the honest discussion is never ever executed.
Yes. Okay. Guy, I'm a bit locked up. I'm sorry. I'm
no, that's
a bit
okay.
out of training.
You can cut that out.
Ah, yeah, that's true. There's also the offline version. When this goes on to Hapaker Public Radio, this is going to sound all sweet and prepared.
Smooth.
And cut out all the pieces where I'm going like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be saying anymore. So let's see. Do we have something else we would want to address?
Well, I think there's a lot more to say about the way the Dutch government wants to deal with cybercrime. So you could ask me a question about that.
Yes.
Wet Computercriminaliteit 3.
Wet Computercriminaliteit 3?
Ja, zo heet hij. Dus zeg maar de nieuwe cybercrime law.
Yes. Yeah, let's just pretend whether this all does not
exist.
Oké, okay, Brenno. This is quite disturbing information. But they are doing stuff in order to do something about cybercrime.
Yes, they
right?
are. Yes, there is a new law in the making. Some kind of cybercrime law, and it has a couple of very interesting points. One of it is, just like in the United Kingdom, it would be possible to force people to hand out their secret keys or their passwords to decrypt information. If the crime is sensitive enough, you can pressure people to do that. That for a couple of reasons, that's very strange. The first reason is, You're not obliged to help get yourself convicted. That's a very important point in the whole process of trying to convict somebody, is that the defendant has rights. And you can't force somebody to incriminate himself. Now, basically, this is what you are asking to do. You know, decrypt the information and start to incriminate yourself. And if you don't apply, you would be punishable by law again. So that's strange.
That's very, but I mean, for example, I have on my hard drive, I have a TrueCrypt volume of a few MBIT, which I created in order to try to decrypt this. I threw away the key because, well, I didn't really need it because there was no data on it anyway. But I don't have that key anymore. What if they want me to decode that data?
Well,
let's assume for the moment that TrueCrypt is indeed a secure thing, so that I haven't managed to crack it yet, but let's just assume it is not crackable.
If it's not crackable, or the government, Dutch government isn't able to, because those are two things, then they would force you to hand over the key. If you claim that you do not have the key, it depends on the judge whether or not he or she will believe you. If you're not being believed, then you're punishable by law. So you better be very convincing, or start to throw away the containers that you cannot open again, Because if you ever, ever end up in this position, then you're really in a bad place. But suppose for a second that it isn't a TrueCrypt container. Suppose that all of a sudden on your disk appears a new file of a couple of megabytes. And it is, for instance, in your cache. And it's labeled .tc, like TrueCrypt. And you have TrueCrypt on your computer. You don't know this file. You don't know where it came from. It might be from some malware or whatever. Now you need to convince the other party that it's data that you didn't download. This is the second thing that is very interesting. Normally, you're innocent until proven guilty. But now we start to turn it around. We found data. Now you have to prove that it wasn't your data. We see that, of course, in other fields as well, like with drugs. If you've got drugs in your house, then basically you end up in the position that you have to explain. But with drugs, it's physical. In a lot of cases, you could have seen it, you could have noticed it. With digital documents, I haven't got a clue. And here comes another part of the law which makes it very interesting. If you want to frame somebody, Dutch police will get the right to hack computers. Or they don't want me to say that they hacked them. They call it, we enter them. Like it's a total normal process, totally okay. Well, it's not okay. It's not normal that the government just starts to hack into a computer. We've seen a case recently that was actually still not legal, but still they did it. They found a server where they claimed that they didn't know where the server was. Even though they had an IP address, they said, like, yeah, but that could be routed anywhere, so we don't know if it's a country where we...